talking about, I'm glad you brought this point up, because we're not really talking about masking our other feelings. We are just talking about honoring each and every one of our feelings and ending the day with appreciation and positiveness that just builds self-compassion, because that's desperately needed.
Welcome to The Confident Healer. I'm your host, Sharmila Mali. And in this podcast, we have inspirational, uplifting, and soulful conversations about the ins and outs of having confidence as a healer and as a healer in business. Hello, we are back this week with an actual conversation with someone else. Yay! In today's episode, I bring back a guest from the second episode to talk about empowering South Asian women and strengthening their leadership in the workforce. She and I are both South Asians. She is Indian and I am Nepali. And she brings up some interesting facts that she discovered in her research about South Asian women in the U.S. corporate world. Things that reflect our South Asian upbringing, such as, you know, the patriarchal society that we grew up in. It's complicated. But she and I have a great talk about the corporate world and how we can be agents of change to create a more harmonious place at work, where productivity, creativity, and self-compassion creates a bottom line of job satisfaction, better leadership, and a better product. Plus, she gives two very simple exercises to create more balance between the inner critic that we all have and developing the inner champion we need more of. So let's get into the show with this week's confident healer, Deepa Pulipati. Hello, and welcome back to The Confident Healer. I'm your hostess, Sharmila Mali. And today we have a familiar face or a familiar voice from episode 2. So let me refresh your memory. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist. Do you remember yet? A certified executive coach, a certified facilitator for Brené Brown workshops for Daring Greatly, Rising Strong, and Bold Teen workshops. She also specializes in working with parents in custody conflicts and mediating their parenting agreements. And she is currently adjunct faculty at Antioch University in Santa Barbara, teaching in their Master of Clinical Psychology program. So please welcome back with a big warm welcome and a big hug, Deepa Pulipati. Yay, welcome back.
Yay, I'm so happy to be back. Thank you, my dear Sharmila, for having me back on the show.
Of course, of course. I'm so happy we are doing this again. So just a little bit of background. So Deepa and I will be collaborating together in her 5-week program specializing in, take it away, Deepa.
South Asian Women Leadership Series. Super fun. Empowering other South Asian women, or women who identify as within the South Asian diaspora. It's been something that like really caught my interest a few months ago when I started doing some research as to, as a coach, what is it that I can offer uniquely to women, given taking into consideration my entire background. And I really sort of said, okay, how about South Asian women? Because I'm a South Asian woman and I'm in at work. And I kind of looked at what is it that I received over the years, my mentors, and how I was able to professionally develop. And I kind of got curious as to what's out there for these women in tech or entrepreneurial fields, and how are they getting their support? So that got me into doing a whole ton of research, and it's supremely interesting. And an area that desperately needs support. And for a lot of people, I think when I talk about South Asian women, they're not able to differentiate between South Asian and Southeast Asian. They just sort of club all of us together under one umbrella. And I was like, oh my God, we have to start with something really basic as saying, okay, South Asian women are from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, and all of those areas. And Southeast Asian women are from Japan, China, Korea, Philippines, etc., right? So it just started, like, even if I look at the articles, it just started from something very basic as we need to make a differentiation, first of all, so people can become more aware that even though we all fall within that big umbrella, we have quite a few amazing differences and qualities within each of these cultures.
Exactly. Well, I'm just curious because, you know, there's a lot of focus on Asians in America. Mm-hmm. And particularly, I guess there's a big, I don't know if it's a lobbying group, AAPI, Asian American Pacific Islanders, which is what, if we're ticking a box, that's what you and I fall under.
Right.
So but I've always noticed that within Asian cultures, it is, you know, women are always treated as second class citizens. And there's always that dampening and tamping down of a woman's voice. So what is, before we go into South Asian women and the lack of confidence and in the workforce, what is the difference? What are the differences between South Asian women and Southeast Asian women? Because to me, I just, you know, I've had so many friends in all of those countries, from all those countries. And it's always a similar thing of not being able to speak up because that's the way we were raised, to just bite your tongue, don't say anything, be polite. And your opinion doesn't matter. No one wants to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I honestly feel the same to a certain extent, but I also don't want us to overgeneralize because in the last 20 years, I've seen such a huge evolution in terms of how all of us South Asian women are perceived. Of course, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, but I feel like women are really breaking barriers and talking more and more. And there's a lot of men within our cultures too are saying, you know what, we need to support these women. We need to give them a voice. But like I said, there's a lot more work to be done. Interestingly, when I started doing the research, there were a lot of articles on the differences between in tech and leadership. Maybe not a lot of articles, few articles that specifically talked about how South Asian women are getting more leadership roles than Southeast Asian women. So okay. Again,
now I understand.
Yeah, again, it was kind of like stereotyping Southeast Asian women as saying they're very submissive or they're like not confrontational. So there were some articles like that, and there was a big recent what was it called? It was a research done by Ascend Leadership, and they did a big research with all the tech companies about just women and roles and gender, and you know, and they came up with, they said that the study focused on promotion of women leadership, South Asian women leadership within the organization. I'm sorry, not South Asian, but Asian women leadership within the organization. And it was interesting that they came up with something very different than what the previous articles talked about. So what I've found out in all of these weeks of research is that there's really consistently no good data for us to find out what's been happening in this workforce in the last 20, 30 years. Is there any professional development for South Asian women? What are the companies doing? And are these women getting supported? And on the other hand, I also want to find out the women that have done really well, South Asian women. Like if you take Indra Nooyi, who was a PepsiCo CEO until last year, she's done amazingly well. So how did she do so well? Like what are the things that she did and what are her struggles? But how was it that she became so successful in an area where there's not a lot of support?
So when you say support, you mean like support within the companies, the company culture, support at home?
I think it's both, because I'm literally not seeing anything out there that, whether it's books, whether it's leadership roles. I mean, there's women leadership seminars, or there are women tech conferences, there's women, you know, all of that. But South Asian women is what my focus is, right? So I'm basically, I was trying to find out, are there organizations? Are there like professional development series for these women? And if there aren't, I want to talk about what are the hurdles? And I also want to talk about women who've been successful. How did they do it? And where did they get their support?
And part of this was because you've had a few South Asian women clients who were complaining about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, more than I think complaining about it, I just sort of made a ton of observations that these women felt like they did not have a path for getting ahead, like somebody that they could, who was South Asian, that they could look up to, or felt like they have a voice. And I've just seen very small, tiny percentage of women. Part of while doing this research, and I came across a study by Ascend Leadership, one of the things that really struck me from that was, and I'm quoting from that study, is it said a pattern of cultural traits that did not align with leadership was found among Asian women, I want to say, but I'm not really sure, which was risk-taking and being confrontational.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that makes me uneasy too. Like, why do I have to be confrontational at work? I mean, I guess if you have something going on, yeah, and yeah, you have to stand up for yourself.
Yeah, but I was like, wait a minute. I don't even know if we want to use the Western word of saying confrontational. Like, what does that even mean? And why,
exactly. Right? Like, what, you know, like, does that mean like the bullying that happens, or the, you know, this like a, what do you, alpha person coming in and like, well, it's this way and this, and these intimidation tactics, or like, yeah, exactly. That's what my question is. What does confrontation mean? You know, is it, there's a difference between being confrontational and speaking up for yourself and like, no, excuse me, that was my idea. And you took it and you're taking it as your own. And I just want to, I'm going to call you out right now. And, you know, there's that. And then there's that's confrontational, but that's also confrontational positive.
Standing up for yourself kind of way, like, you know, advocating for yourself, right? The other big piece that I got from that was, I think when they even mean that, maybe they're talking about women being in like leadership roles where they're managing teams, and when they find something that they think is not working within that construct, maybe they're not pushing back at, I don't know if it's men, I don't know if it's people on their team, I don't know what it is, maybe that's what they're seeing. So I just read through the study, but I just didn't dig deep into what was the reasoning behind coming up with risk-taking and being confrontational, right? What are the questions that they asked, and how much was it, like, you know, what percentage of it was, these were the two factors that came in. But so that's why I think it comes back to the fact that there's really no good data on this. You will not believe it, Sharmila. Like, I research books to see, like, books written specifically for South Asian women leaders. I have like less than 10 books. Mm. And I have books like, and I'm picking up, like, there's this book called Radical Spirits. Okay. This one was written, it's of course nonfiction. It was written by a South Asian author about Anandi Joshi, who came in 1883 from India to become a doctor here. Right? So there's like, mm-hmm. like just one in, I don't know, like years. But there's so many South Asian women who are doing so well here in India and all over like South Asia and America. And I'm like, why is it that we don't have any information on what's going on with these women? Where's the support? Where's the help? Where's the mentorship? Look at this. There was another, and I emailed this researcher. There are two researchers, Dr. Morley and Dr. Crossword. They did a huge research in women leadership in South Asia as such in 2016. And they came up with the same thing, couldn't find too much, couldn't find good information. But some of the stuff, it's like a 30-page like research. And I read, like I was at page 15 or 16, where I came across this term, they use distractions rather than a lot of women. They found that there were a lot of distractions rather than the attractions of leadership among these women generally. So clearly there's South Asian women are amazing leaders. So what are these distractions? Are there cultural distractions? Is it patriarchy? Is it not being taken seriously? And a lot of information, again, I'm quoting from this research, it was associated leadership with the effective burden of dealing with conflict and negativity in competitive, professional, and patriarchal cultures. And there was another one which said, no, quote unquote, no formal leadership development or preparation. That's what a lot of women said.
It's interesting. And I just think about like all these people who get tired of all these people I've spoken to who get tired of that corporate culture and leave, whether they're men or women, because it's like it's soul sucking and draining. And they leave and start something. They either do something completely different, like become a healer or start their own company, you know, doing something else, you know?
It doesn't have to be, right? It doesn't have to be, because we've seen within the way we've lived our lives too, that there are a lot of women who can do both, who can take care of their homes, who can work a job, but they just have to be supported either by their companies or by their partners at home, right? Without that support, then it's harder. Like Indra Nui says in one of the articles, she says the reason there's a lot of women in top leadership is...
So what Deepa means to say is there aren't many South Asian women in top leadership positions.
She said by the time they hit level 2 or 3, they start having families, and because there's no parent to leave, then of course they drop out. So clearly no parent to leave from the companies, and how much support do they have within their own homes? Because of course their partners are working too. So, right. So then one of them have to make a sacrifice. And within South Asian cultures, it's usually the woman who says, okay, I guess I'll be at home with the kids. Right. And the other thing that she very briefly talks about is unconscious bias. But I would love to know, like, what specifically is the unconscious bias that these women are dealing with? And that's why I think it's really critical to get into these companies and work directly with South Asian women, A, to support them in whatever it is that's coming their way, create a voice for them, give them an opportunity, and B, gather these stories.
So, you know, what's interesting, what keeps coming up for me is that it almost sounds like, you know, that women, South Asian women, need to fit into this culture of corporate culture. And what I'm thinking is like, no, corporate culture needs to change because it's really fucking toxic. Like everyone I've talked to, like they get out of it. They're like, oh my God, I don't want to do it anymore. They take a break and but I think that's what's really needed is like, yes, support, different areas of support in developing your voice and developing leadership skills. But it's just like, what kind of leadership skills? Because it's like, if you're modeling yourself after like a broken system, that's not something that, you know, as we're seeing in the past year, like there's so many systems that have just been put on display, just how how much tweaking and how much things need to be completely renovated. And I think that that's also too in this so-called corporate culture of putting, you know, it's always profit over people, and, you know, putting these people who are working for you, making them work like, well, 80 hours, because we have to, you know, we have to get this software online. And, you know, it's these crazy long hours, and they're not getting any more compensated for it. So yeah, there's just, I think just across the board, there's a corporate culture that needs to change.
And again, I think this is where I think what we are going to do is going to be really critical, is because we can actually create an avenue for change by empowering these women, or maybe these are already empowered women, but they need other critical skills to do the pushback, right? And like this Ascend Leadership study said, maybe they need to be more confrontational. Like, and you know, people are all confrontational avoidance. Like they can't, they don't want to do the, you know, they don't want to be confrontational, right? But maybe it's just figuring out, maybe it's not you being confrontational, but maybe you're just like being a leader. If you've made a decision in spite of like 10 men in front of you saying no, 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 but you're confident in the decision that you made, then you have the team deploy that or do whatever it is that you do, right? So I think just segueing into what is it that we are trying to do, I think we want to create a space for these women to have conversations, whether we do it through storytelling, whether we do it through critical skills building, whether we do it through just self-esteem, self-confidence building, right? Or emotionally having conversations with in a professional setting. And when I say emotionally, like just being very vulnerable, like Brené Brown says, right? And but that's a hard part. So that's why I think it's so critical for us to do this work. And as I'm doing the research, I'm finding it more and more urgent, right? The need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So jumping into the program, our program. In the South Asian Women's Leadership Program that you and I will be leading, I wanted to talk about some of the solutions that this program offers South Asian women.
Yeah, so one of the things, and this is going to be very exciting, because one of the things that we're going to be doing every week, Sharmila, is we're going to have like specific skill building exercises that will focus on all of these things. Part of some of these skill building exercises are going to be based on what the group of women talked to us in the first week. Like, some of the experiences they may be having may not be about assertiveness. It may be just about, you know, we're not being taken seriously. So how do we talk about that then, right? And if it is about assertiveness, if it is about confidence, then we're going to be doing a big piece of like something called as a perfect day exercise, which is like very strategic in how we look at boundaries, how we look at a perfect day, how we envision a productive and fulfilling day in a professional life, right? So specifically, every week is going to have a skill that we're going to build. And also all the women are going to be working on a little bit creative, fun, playful piece that they can perform at the end.
Nice. That sounds, yeah, that's exciting. That sounds a lot like a lot of fun. I love that it'll be bespoke. Yes. Something tailored to, you know, like there is a structure, but it'll just be just depending on what the energy is, what most of the women are complaining about or having issues with, that's what to focus on. So like, what is like, just to give people out there who are wanting to have, what is the purpose of having to do a visualization of what a perfect day is or write and writing it out? Like why is that important? How does that help?
One of the things that I've consistently, I mean, seen with a lot of professionals that I work with in the coaching space is that we're always or they are, maybe sometimes I am too, always aspiring to have this phenomenally productive day, right? So we do this as we do in coaching, like a worst case scenario. I do a lot of that in therapy, but not maybe as much as coaching. It's flipping that and saying, let's do an ideal day. And what does it really look like? And is it achievable? And what does productivity look like? Is it working like 10 hours or is it working smartly for 4 hours? So it'll explore all of those options, and it'll also explore the option of people saying, oh my God, I wish this day was very productive. But they usually, generally, most people are quite productive, but they have certain expectations of themselves that they feel like they're not reaching. So it's a way for us to explore and show that, look, perfect day for you ideally may look like perfectionism, like I want to reach to a certain goal, and we keep changing that goalpost, right? So let's take a step back and really see what's an ideal day and what kind of a day do you want to have at the end of each week?
And I guess a good way to measure that is by taking inventory, like throughout your day, like maybe half day through, like what did you want to accomplish and what was accomplished? What are the things that you did? Because it's like, you know, sometimes, like you were saying, you don't, sometimes we don't feel as productive, but when we look back and take inventory and see like, okay, what did I do? Especially if you're working in groups, which most people, you know, might be look a little different now because we're a lot of people are working from home, especially in the tech industry. And what that looks like. And does that also include, because now, you know, we're kind of coming out of a pandemic. I mean, it's still very much loosening up some of the restrictions of being close together in proximity. But like, I'm curious to find out, like, you know, when you're at home and you have a family, or maybe you're taking care, you know, you have an adult, a parent or someone that you're taking care of, like, does that factor into your work?
It absolutely does. And I think that's one of the biggest things women in general tackle across the world, but I think South Asian women more so in different ways, of course, that they try to create that balance between both these worlds. And many of the women that I've spoken to feel the sense. I don't know if it's a previous, you know, it's like a conditioning of what they've been told over the years or what they've seen, is that they have to achieve, like, they have to do better at home. They have to do good at home. They have to do good at work. You just tend to drop quite a bit of balls, like when trying to like do everything, right? So what happens is most women, they work super hard and then they don't feel like they're appreciated or they themselves are having a lot of self-compassion towards, you know, what they do, right? So part of this 5 series work will actually take all that into consideration. And the last week prior to everybody performing their small tiny piece will be, we're going to be deeply talking about self-compassion, and we're going to be doing this like really amazing appreciative inquiry that looks at strength finding rather than magnifying the weaknesses.
I know, right? That's why I think those men and women tend to do that is, you know, focusing on the weak or your so-called weaknesses, things that you feel like you can't do, instead of like focusing like, well, I'm really good at doing this and that's what I did today. You know, I think also too is managing what, like, it seems to be, I am definitely, I don't know about you, but I am not a type A personality. I am not, I would never consider myself a go-getter. Like I do go do things and, but what for someone that is a type A personality, that's like, go, go, go. And like, you know,
achieve and yes. Yeah.
What is the fine line between being productive and if you didn't hit these goals, like, you know, still feeling good about yourself. Like it always seems like, you know, some people will say, oh, that's, it's a cop out, you know, like, well, the truth is I didn't. It's like, well, okay, yeah, that's true. But like, you know, there's a level of expectation. And so I'm just wondering if there's a fine line and how to help people who are type A personalities overcome that like, okay, well, I didn't get these 10 things done, so mm-hmm. today was a total failure. Mm-hmm. Like, is there...
So I think it's really about exploring what's important about getting these 10 things done. Like, what is behind this sense of I have to achieve this by the age of 35? Because there's a lot behind it. It's just not a sense of, you know, success, but there's like a lot of stuff that happens in the background of what we've perceived, how we want to be, or how we would say, this is how I would say I'm successful if I did this at this certain age, like whatever, like tag, like we've given it, right? So the idea is in these few weeks to sort of explore all of that and ask ourselves, like, why is this, like, what's important about this? What's important about doing it this way? And if it's not happening the way we want it to happen, so how can we make some changes to it and make it more productive, right? So that's why part of the work that we're going to be doing, because it's a group work and it's not individual coaching, is that we're going to do a lot of breakout rooms so other women can listen to each other about some of the cool things that they do and then learn from that and say, maybe I want to tweak this and not look at it as doing 10 things a day, but look at it as What is it that I've achieved today?
Mm.
Right? It's a very simple exercise I did with my grad students like last quarter, where we spent 21 days at the end of the night writing 3 things that we are appreciative of in our day, right? And it was so incredible on the days that I felt like, oh my God, it was such a crazy day. I don't know what I did. I don't know where the time went. I don't know if I did anything. I was still able to, when I was able to find 3 things that I really appreciated in the day, it made such a huge difference mentally about how I thought of my day.
Mm. Yeah. And
it's kind of along the same lines. Like, we have all of those tools. It's just that we focus on things that may not be very helpful to us. Yeah. So just bringing awareness to that, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Well, to me it does. But I mean, I'm just thinking of, you know, someone that is, you know, they do that tough love thing on themselves and to other people, which works with some personalities. Sure. It works. Yeah. But I just wonder, like, that tough love on yourself, like, well, don't, you know, not giving yourself any slack. And it seems to me like a lack of compassion.
Or maybe not enough compassion, not enough self-care, because we're always putting, like, at home, probably most of, I can only speak of my own experience or the South Asian women that I've come across. And a lot of them are putting, you know, everyone else's needs ahead of them. I mean, you know, and most of the time, most of these women are running around like headless chickens. Mm. I mean, even everybody loves Indian cooking. Like, this is just a small example, right? But it takes so much time and energy, yes, to cook Indian food.
Yes.
So it's not like a one pot thing. Now we're getting smart about it, but it's not like a one pot thing. You put it in there, you throw some salad together, you have a glass of wine.
No.
It's like dal and chawal and roti and da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. So you're just like, it takes so much time and energy. And in between doing all of that, you're probably replying to emails. You're probably thinking about work. You're looking at your kids, like, you know, like, what is it that my child has done today? And so many things. So you kind of tend to sort of not give yourself the time you need to not only appreciate who you are, but also taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. For our Ghana listeners in India. Ghana. For our Ghana listeners, thank you. I'm not a native Hindi speaker. Our Ghana listener, Ghana.com listeners in India, who are, you know, working or maybe in school, is to try to implement that exercise of three things that you appreciate yourself. And it can be you know, what you think is the smallest thing, like, well, I woke up and I made my bed. I think that's an appreciation, you know, appreciation for something you did. And why is that from my perspective, I can talk about that, but from your perspective as a psychologist, why is that so helpful to do? I mean, I know it's something that it's a muscle to build is to find things that you're grateful for, is to learn to appreciate what you have. Why is that so helpful mentally and emotionally and spiritually?
Because it's positive thinking creates positive sort of like affect in your body. It's kind of like working out. It creates a like rush of like really natural endorphins that are in your body, right? So the reason it's become very important in this day and age, and it probably has been for like several, I don't know, hundreds of years, is because we as humans tend to focus a lot on negatives, right? Like this didn't happen, that didn't happen. And I don't know, for everybody, for each person it's different, right? For me, like when I do that, I'm constantly like, oh my God, I feel like I'm catching up. I have like all of these things that I need to do and I'm still doing them. I feel like I'm catching up. But then I don't realize that, gosh, there's a whole bunch of things that I also did. And I did that while I went for rowing this morning, while I picked up and dropped off my kid, while I sent off 100 emails as a board chair for my school, and while the students, as I'm teaching grad students and my clients that I see in therapy. And then I go pick up my kid and drop off my kid at rowing. And then in between that, I make breakfast, lunch, dinner. So we're still being so amazingly productive given everything that goes on in our lives, right? But at the end of the day, most people that I speak to in my profession are like focused on, gosh, I didn't do this, I didn't do that, I didn't do this. So this not only builds a habit, but it creates that like nice level of happiness in our mind. Like, gosh, it was actually a decent day. You know, like something as simple as, you know, I was able to spend like an hour sitting outside talking to my son while we're having tea, my 14-year-old son, in the evening. Like, I wouldn't even have thought about it in the night, right? In that moment, I enjoyed it. But when I actually bring it to attention in the night as a way of appreciating my day, it changes how my outlook. Makes me feel very more positive, more happy. My cup is full.
Yeah. And I wanted to also add to that, it just, from an energetic perspective, you know, it expands your energy because it's, you know, when you're focusing and contracting, you just starts closing in on you and you start to feel like you have this weight on your shoulders and you start your maybe your body just closes in on itself, but you feel this heaviness, but then when you take the time to just list three things, and it always helps to write it out. It's that connection of your hand to something physical and bringing it from one dimension, from your head out into two dimensions. And then you can see it on a piece of paper. It always feels so expansive. And then in that expansive, then you have room for other things. You have room for, you know, your cup is full. You're not constantly running on empty. You know, you're like, oh, I have room to do this. And you have room to really create a habit of creating a room of learning how to appreciate and giving yourself that time of like, wow, that was, you know, like, that's beautiful. Like, you know, those moments are going to go by so fast as these 14 years with him as, you know, before he...
I know, my hair's already gray. Like, I'm just like, what happened? When did this happen in the last 20 years of my life? Right. So, but also one of the good things about this exercise is also, just sort of grounding us in so many ways. Right. And I have a lot of clients who actually do it with their family members or with a bunch of like their sisters or their best friends. And it brings such group cohesiveness that everybody's appreciating and talking about it and sharing mm-hmm. with each other, right? And mm-hmm. it adds another element of this, like, oh, wow, yeah. So we're all sort of feeling good. And this is collective, like, positive energy, right?
Right.
I mean, there's been several studies where people have looked at when you fall sick, your rate of recovery post a surgery or whatever is, if you're more positive, your recovery is faster. If you're more negative, your recovery is not that fast. Mm. And there's been like scientific studies on it. And it's also the power of our thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And not to say that it's not about, you know, overriding, you know, right. not acknowledging like, well, that, yeah, you know, that was pretty shitty. Mm-hmm. And what else is there to appreciate about,
exactly.
about it or something else, you know, just to kind of balance, you know, because it needs a balance out. And if you do, you know, I've talked to a couple different people about this, is to give yourself a time limit. Like, okay, how long do I want to feel shitty about this for? Like, how long do I want to focus and list all the negative things that happen and beat myself up for it? Like how give yourself, you know, is it 5 minutes? Is it 2 days? You know, give yourself a time limit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to get it out of your system, because it's not about ignoring the, you know, the problem, ignoring like, yeah, no. You know, like I slammed my foot in the door. Like, what? I feel so, I'm going to feel really positive, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah. We have to feel the pain. Like yeah, we have to honor the pain we're feeling. I'd probably be like screaming murder. Right. Like I'll be like, oh my God. So we're not really talking about, I'm glad you brought this point up, because we're not really talking about masking our other feelings. We're just talking about honoring each and every one of our feelings and ending the day with appreciation and positiveness that just builds self-compassion, because that's desperately needed. We're so hard on ourselves. So why can't we look at building in a very small way self-compassion?
Yeah. Yeah. Like why do we have to be hard on ourselves? Why can't we be easy on ourselves? Why is it like, and it's like, so I don't know how it is in India, but like, here it's kind of a badge of honor. Like, how hard can you be on yourself? You know, like, especially if you get in a group of women and everyone starts talking about their flaws, you know, and it's like, yeah, my flaw, you know, like, yeah. And you know, and it's like, all right, well, let's get all that out. But now let's focus on like, what are our positive aspects on ourselves? So yeah, I guess,
I mean, you know what, the only time I'm really hard on myself is like, when I'm pushing myself to lift some heavy weights. I'm like, that's the only one. I'm just kidding. I'm like, I mean, there's spaces in our life where it's good to be hard on ourselves. And then all of this brings back to the point that we're wanting to talk about, and you and I have talked about it several times, is that this creating the sense of balance, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just sort of like, what is it that is at the end of the day or at the end of a work week? What is it? What is important for me? How do I want to feel? What's going to make me sort of, you know, pat myself on my back and say, hey, good job, right? And also, how do I be smartly productive? Right. So it's integration of all of these things. And I think the exciting thing about our program, Sharmila, is going to be the fact that every group is going to be different mm-hmm. and the rest of the 4 weeks may not look like the same for every group.
Right.
So our group is going, part of what we are going to be doing is that our group is going to bring some direction into which way we want to go, as we have our fundamentals also.
And I will have all this in the show notes where you can sign up and find out more. But in the meantime, start something new for yourself and write down 3 things that you appreciate about yourself. So I'll start. What I appreciate about myself is that this is maybe not about myself, but I'm so glad that we're having this conversation. That's one thing I'm really appreciating, like taking the time to talk about expanding your energy and bringing more self-love to yourself, learning how to care for yourself and not just focusing on what I didn't do, but what I have. And let's see, the second thing I appreciate about myself is that I am still wearing my pajama pants. And that's okay.
Totally okay.
Because it's a little chilly and I didn't feel like changing. Perfect. And I was still at home, and that's there. And the third thing I can appreciate about myself is that I have a really good sense of humor.
Yeah.
About myself. So that's something I appreciate. I very much appreciate that I have a good sense of humor, that I can say this on air.
Yeah.
And have it forever taped as long as I keep this episode up, is that sometimes I record if I'm at home in my pajama pants and it is late in the afternoon. So there you go.
Yeah. Who cares? As long as it makes you happy and you're comfortable.
And what are three things that you appreciate about yourself?
Oh gosh. Yeah. One is today was my first day of rowing on the lake, and I so appreciate the fact that I didn't tip the boat over and fell in the water. And I made it back to the dock by myself. I just can't say, right? The second thing I appreciate is the fact that I came home and I went full on breakfast mode and then getting ready mode. So I was like, damn, my energy is really good today. And the third thing is the fact that, you know, you and I think I really appreciate the fact that we both have been able to connect on this and do work together. So I think that's like, that's been one of the good things the last few weeks, that, you know, you and I have been talking about this, and then hopefully we'll do a lot of work more together with this. So that's what I appreciate.
Yeah. Thank you. And so, yeah, let us know three things that you appreciate. You can, and I'll have this on the show notes, but let us know what your three things are that you appreciate, and try to do your best to at least recognize one thing if you can't come up with three things. So thank you, Deepa, for being on here today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And my name is Sharmila, and this is The Confident Healer, and we will see you next time. Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening. Please go to www.theconfidenthealer.net. This is the best place to listen to the podcast, and it's also where you can go and find the guest info in the show notes. Remember, there are three important actions to take to help grow the show. Invite others to listen, leave a review if you learned something new, or if you just learned something, and by leaving a donation. You can find the links on theconfidenthealer.net. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.